We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Irish Breakdown Podcast. Notre Dame fans, IB Nation, we're glad to have you with us today. And we're going to do something a little bit different today. Normally, Friday is recruiting hour, and that is our recruiting director at Irish Breakdown, Ryan Roberts. But, Ryan, the coaches are on the road, and there's a lot of things we could talk about. But, you know, I think there's a little bit more pressing things right now going on, and that is the 2024 NFL Draft. Last night was round one. We are going to discuss that now in today's show. We're going to kick things off by looking at, from a Notre Dame perspective, obviously Joe Walt got picked last night. We'll kick things off talking about that and just the fit and what we think and what the Chargers said about it and all that good stuff. And yep. Also kind of what it shows about Notre Dame's continued dominance is off O-line U, which I had a little data on that last night. And then once we're done with that, we're going to dive into an evaluation of the first round. Ryan and I have a lot of thoughts. We were texting and calling last night nonstop, and there was a lot. It was a very interesting night, very interesting night. And we talked yesterday in the show, Ryan, it could go a lot of different ways. There could be a lot of movement. We also talked about how no one's going to move up because everybody's trying to move down. We saw a lot more moving down than we necessarily saw moving up with some teams. Very interesting night, and didn't quite go the way that most people thought, but I thought it was still a very interesting night. So we're going to talk about the picks we like, the picks we don't like, and just overall thoughts on last night's draft class, which was a very, very, very wild night, Ryan. And you were up way later than you normally are, man, but it was a wild night.
I packed it in as soon as the final pick was in, though. It was like 11:45. I'm like, yeah, I'm done, dude. I'm good. I don't need to be up any longer. So, but it was we'll get into obviously some of the head scratchers, but like the number 8 overall pick really threw things through some loops, man.
Really, wow. It really did shake up the entire draft in my
opinion. And it continued until like pick 17, because 17 was a good pick in my opinion. But even that one was like one that you're just like, huh. Didn't think Dallas Turner would be there at 17 at that point. So yeah, it was a really strange like 9 pick swing. It was really strange.
Yes. And there's some guys on the board that I'm shocked are on the board. We'll talk about that in part 2 of today's show as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But Ryan, we're going to kick things off talking about things from Notre Dame perspective, because last night some history was made with Notre Dame, sort of history. At least it's been a long, long time. Joe Walt, we talked about the possibility yesterday of Joe Walt going number 5 to the Chargers. You actually had the Chargers taking Joe Walt in your mock draft. You just had them going down a spot to get him.
Yep.
So the fit was clearly there. But just what was your initial reaction, first and foremost, Ryan, to Joe Walt being the number 5 pick for the Los Angeles Chargers?
I mean, it was kind of validation for a second because obviously we've been beating the drum of Joelle is the best offensive tackle in the class. But also, I pushed back heavily on yesterday's show about Daniel Jeremiah and a couple other people saying J.C. Latham was going to be the first offensive tackle on the board. Like, I just didn't buy that. Now, J.C. all obviously ended up going very high. He went number 7 to the Tennessee Titans, so it's not like he wasn't far behind Joe. But it is obviously a testament to what Coach Jim Harbaugh is trying to now build in Los Angeles. No matter where he's been, the consistent factor has always been strong, powerful, good offensive lines. That has been the consistency. Think about what he did. I don't know who was on the offensive line at University of San Diego back in the day. Like, I'm not sure about that one, but Stanford always had really good offensive lines when he was there. The San Francisco 49ers had some guys named Joe Staley that were, you know, pretty dang good football players. And I forget the guard's name that was from Idaho, who was at that point, but he was a monster as well. So they have always just kind of stressed that for his programs.
And Mike Iupati guy?
Mike Iupati. Yeah, he was like a 6'5", 340-pound, just like behemoth playing left guard. So they've always had very strong offensive lines, obviously. And then he goes to Michigan, and how did Michigan win a national championship? It was built off of being a really strong offensive line-driven team. So him going to Los Angeles, the Chargers, it was a very interesting conversation because there was a lot of speculation of wide receiver, and wide receiver would have made sense. They got rid of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, and if they would have taken Malik Nabers at 5, I wouldn't have said a word because it makes sense for their needs. It really does. But obviously, what Jim Harbaugh has always stressed and been consistent with is offensive line play, which is pretty hilarious as a former quarterback. But yeah, so he opts for the pass blocking compared to the pass.
Let me tell you, Ryan, as a former quarterback, that's always, always a priority for a quarterback, especially the older ones that didn't grow up in the 7-on-7 era. Absolutely, absolutely. That's an important thing.
Yeah. I think it's just the core value stuff, man. It's the core values of what Jim Harbaugh teams are built off of. They have had a hole at right tackle over the last couple of years, a position that could clearly get upgraded. And if Joelle's the right tackle or there's some wheeling and dealing and he ends up at left, no matter how it ends up, the Los Angeles Chargers now have potentially one of the best bookends at tackle in the entire National Football League moving forward, potentially, if Joelle is what we think he is. So I think the fit makes a lot of sense. I think it's again, consistent to the core values, and I completely understand why he was the pick at number 5.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, just to put some context, Ryan, into the history that was made last night, it was like, it's not so much history and like something's never happened before, but it's been a long time. This is the highest Notre Dame player picked in the draft since Rick Meyer went number two overall back in 1993. Now, they've been close. Quentin Nelson was number six, and Ronnie Stanley was number six. Bryant Young was number seven. So they've had top 10 picks. Mike McGlinchey was number nine. But to have a guy go top five overall, first time since 1993, and it's the highest Notre Dame offensive lineman pick since George Koontz went number two overall back in 1969. So it just speaks, and to do it in a year where the draft class is loaded. And the reason I say that, Ryan, because when it's a bad draft class at left tackle, and let's say he was the only, then all of a sudden you can understand him going to top five because what's behind him maybe not as good. I felt that's partly why Mike McGlinchey got picked as high as he did back right. in 2018, because if you don't take McGlinchey there, it wasn't a great tackle class. So you could understand people reaching for him right. if it was a bad class. But in a stacked class, you're taking him because we think he's that guy.
Right. It wasn't a class where Luke Jokel and Eric Fisher are the first two picks, where you're just like, that's by default, right? Like in any ordinary year, Eric Fisher is probably more of a late one, early two type of pick, but he's buoyed all the way up into the top 10 because of the need at that position, obviously, is always there. So I think that for me, that is a testament to it. And honestly, Brian, like I think he just checked the most boxes at the end of the day. Like we've talked about this. Every tackle that was selected yesterday has some reason why an NFL team is valuing them heavily, right? And we could talk about J.C. Latham and the physicality and the power profile. We could talk about Amarius Mims and the upside and just kind of the freak show athleticism. We could talk about Olu Fashanu and the core strength he has and the quick feet he has. Like all these guys have Fuaga, something about right. them. Fuaga Power. With the physicality yeah. and the movement skills. Like every one of these players has one thing or multiple things that makes him a really attractive player, which is why I think a lot of those guys will end up being good offensive tackles at the next level. But the reason that Joe Alt was number five and the first one off the board, in my opinion, is quite simply, what box doesn't he check? We've talked about this in nauseam at this point, but you're 6'8 plus, you're 320 pounds, you have 34 plus inch arms, you are the son of a former NFL offensive lineman that was also a Pro Bowler and in the Ring of Honor. You were coached under Harry Heistand for a year. You have the Notre Dame emblem next to your name. Like all those things tell you that Joe Alt is a very high floor player. Right. And you could argue that a couple of those guys maybe have a higher ceiling. I would argue that Amarius Mims has a higher ceiling than Joe Alt, but he has a much higher floor. And I think that we have underestimated that in the draft community, that offensive line coaches on the NFL level, they care about floor, man. Ceiling's exciting, but they also care about floor.
Well, Ryan, you could just listening to the Chargers last night, I think a point that you make that I think is a great point, Ryan, is the notion that when you look at a lot of those guys, you could argue that there are certain guys that have strengths that are greater than anything that Joe Walt's best strength is, just individual best strength. I think that's at least debatable to have that point. J.C. Latham's power is individually better than whatever you perceive Joe Walt's best attribute to be. And even a guy like Tyler Guyton that I have some questions about, your elite length, elite size, comes from a program that they do this and do that. But the difference in Joe Walt is the things that people were looking for as criticisms of Joe Walt were nitpicks that aren't actually weaknesses. The notion that, oh, he's not real powerful. Well, yeah, if you're going back and watching his true freshman and true sophomore seasons and then ignoring his junior season. But that was what was so interesting about listening to, I wrote an article on one of our Irish Breakdown sites today where I listened to the interview and transcribed the interview that they had last night. Jim Harbaugh and Jim, is it Jortiz? Is that how you say his last name, the GM for the Chargers?
Not even sure.
But yeah. They were talking about him, and they're talking about his power. You know, Harbaugh's talking about his freaky athleticism. The other guy, the GM's talking about his power, and you're thinking, like, this is a proper evaluation of Joe Walt. This is what we've been saying all along. Like, you can nitpick this, that, or the other thing, but the fact of the matter is, this guy's an elite player. This guy's an elite talent that doesn't really have any flaws. And they just raved about him. I thought it was you hear words, Ryan, that with Joe Walt that when you listen to the GMs, I think got missed by some evaluators. I'm not talking about draft Twitter. I'm talking about people that you and I would say that we respect.
Mainstream guys.
Yeah. Right. That have some credibility to what they do.
Right.
And I don't think enough credit was given to Joe Alt's athleticism for his size. And that is something to where you listen to the Chargers last, they're using the word freaky. They're using the word elite athleticism. And I don't think enough people are putting enough credit into just how athletic Joe Alt is. Right. And it's something that you and I have been talking about when evaluating him for years, which is he's so clean and so smooth that it almost, you miss just how good he is.
Right. Well, I think that it happens all the time for some prospects. Like, I remember talking to JC Horn about this, Brian, and JC was talking about how people had questions about his long speed. And then he literally said that he talked to a team and was like, when did I get beat deep? Like, when did I get beat deep? And then he runs 4.39 at his pro day. And you're like, yeah, maybe he just is smooth more than explosive. Right. Or, you know, it doesn't show up because it just makes everything look so easy. And that's what it's always been about Joe for me, is that I wasn't shocked when Joe tested as an elite athlete, because I always just thought he was such a good athlete that he made everything look easy. Like the foot, if you had a foot speed concern with Joe Alt, my question would simply be this, and I have asked people this: when did you see him lose the outside track and lose around the corner? When did you see it?
Here's why, and it's kind of, I'm being sarcastic. Once, when there was a snap miscommunication against Duke this year, and he didn't get out of a stance.
Right.
That's the one time he got beat outside. That's the only sack he allowed the last 2 years was to RJ Open. And a play where there was a clear snap miscommunication, and RJ Obens is coming, and Joe Walt's still in his stance, and he still almost got to him. I'm being sarcastic with that, Ryan, but it proves to the point. And it's not like Notre Dame hasn't played some pretty good defensive ends the last couple of years as well.
Everything that Joe Alt needs to improve on is something that is easily fixed, right? We've talked about this. The core strength for Joe Alt, does that need to get better? Yeah, I think so. He can still add power to his frame. Like, no doubt about it. But the key is that is a simple offseason in a strength and conditioning program on the NFL level. That's all that is. All that is, because he plays with good bend, he's got length, and he's got overall great athleticism. That's the only thing. People point to a play, I think it was against JT Tuimoloau in Ohio State, where he gave up a little bit of grounds getting bull rush. And I'm like, guys, one, JT wasn't able to get off the block, right? Like, he wasn't able to get off. Two, I could fix that. I could fix that. If Joe Alt was a lumbering athlete that isn't able to get to his 45 or his vertical step and gets beat around the track, I can't really fix that, man. I'm not going to make him a ton more athletic. I might be able to make him more flexible, but like, I'm not increasing his foot speed at this point in his career that much on the next level. So core strength, I can improve. Technique, I can improve. But also, Joel's very technically sound for a kid that is his age. I mean, could it improve even more? Absolutely. But again, he has all the core competencies, all of the traits that you look at and say, those are all unteachables that I don't need to touch. The only thing that I need to touch is the teachable stuff, right? Getting stronger, getting, you know, maybe having better hand play or more aggressive hand play at the top of a track. Like, those things, I can improve upon those. At the end of the day, there's a lot of things that are God-given that I don't need to mess with. Joe Welch just has it.
Here's the issue with that kind of play too, Ryan. I don't need to fix that because, and you're making a hypothetical, if that's a consistent issue, it's something I can fix.
Right.
But my point is when you're pointing to that one play, like there's like Xavier Worthy. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to say I question his hands because I do, yeah. Or I question his play strength because I do, I could show you 10 to 15 snaps of that happening. Mm-hmm. In 3 years, you can show me one snap where that happened to Joe Walt, right? Right. I could actually show you two snaps where he got driven back like that. One was because against Louisville, where literally his left guard sticks his foot out and he hits that guy's foot and then loses his balance because he hits the guy's foot and gets driven back. And you're talking about a guy that's potentially going to be a first-round draft pick next year that they battled for an entire game. The reason that I said this, Ryan, is that it was a nitpick and not a real criticism is because you could only show me that one rep, and it wasn't even that bad, and Joe Alt won the rep because JT didn't make the play or didn't right. influence the play. If it was an issue, then you'd show me 5-6 clips where that was an issue, and mm-hmm. that's what I would watch last night. Whenever Lewis – because I watched the one with Lewis Riddick because I –
Is that very much enjoy
Lewis Riddick, right?
Is that ESPN or
NFL? It was the Network? ESPN one, yes. ESPN. Like I couldn't do the I can't do the ESPN one because I just can't listen to. I just can't do Pat McAfee and
I put it on mute, man. I don't even listen to anybody anymore.
I can't do NFL Network because I can't do Rich Eisen. But I thoroughly enjoy listening to Lewis Riddick and some of the guys there, so I can listen to. I can deal with Mike Greenberg because I respect those other guys, but. The thing I like about Lewis Riddick is he tends to do a good job of pros and then a couple areas of concern. Right. And whenever there's areas of concern, he'll show you, you know, 4 or 5 clips of it being an issue. And you can't do that with Joe Walt. You can't show me 4 or 5 clips where he's getting rocked back as a junior in college.
Right.
And that's the thing is like when you're just going to find one play in one game against a first rounder and say, that's an issue. Well, show me all the other 35, 40 times they were going toe to toe.
Right.
And tell me what happened. Because I saw Joe play really well that game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even his best game. He wasn't even like at the top of his game in that game.
Well,
and that's what's nonsense to me.
I would just say too, when we're talking about offensive tackle play, especially on the NFL level, there are some guys that are super flashy, man, like super flashy. They'll give you the plays every once in a while, but then we undervalue. And this guy was super undervalued, even though he's maybe the best left tackle I have ever seen. I mean, Orlando Pace is probably number one, but like Joe Thomas is in the conversation, right? For what he did with the Cleveland Browns. And he was so underrated during his career with Cleveland because he just didn't lose reps. Like but it wasn't flashy. It wasn't driving guys off the ball and 7 to 10 yards downfield on run blocking and snatch trapping dudes to the ground and pancaking. I'm like, it wasn't that type of stuff. But he just won reps. And that's just what Joe Alt is to me. Joe Alt is an inch and a half tall. Well, actually probably more about an inch taller version of Joe Thomas. That's what I think he can be potentially. And I know that's compared to an NFL Hall of Famer, but I believe it.
When
man.
You take a guy number 5 overall, Ryan, there's an expectation that we're getting something that's going to be really good for the next 10 years. Yeah. Right. I mean, Joe Thomas was the number 1 overall pick, I believe. Correct. Coming out. Correct.
I think 2. I think he was 2.
Okay. So 1 or 2. He was picked really high.
Really high, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the fit, Ryan, with the Chargers, because this is where it gets interesting. And so Jim Harbaugh last night, I'm going to read you the quote from Jim Harbaugh. He was asked, or listen to the interview, he was asked at least 3 or 4 times about the position that he's going to play and, you know, are they going to move all that. And so people were asking him about, you know, is obviously, you know, you've got Rashawn Slater at left tackle and Joe Walt's going to be right tackle, right? And Jim Harbaugh very much, and this is kind of partly his just who Jim Harbaugh is. He doesn't want to give you anything. But every time he answered it, he answered it similar to what I'm about to read now. He says, we don't know yet. Count on us playing our best 5 offensive linemen. What position each guy plays within the offense and within the offensive line is to be determined. And at one point he did talk about how Rashawn Slater's their left tackle now, but it was sort of a for now type of conversation. So I am very curious to see kind of how this shakes out because he talked about how much they like Trey Pipkins and those type of things. And you and I talked about that before the show. That could just be posturing for trade value, you know, but I do think it's going to be interesting to kind of to get into this, because I understand the notion that Rashawn Slater is a pretty good left tackle from what people say. I'm only speaking to this from what my evaluation of him coming out of high school was. I haven't seen much of him in the NFL. But Joe Walt's a significantly better left tackle prospect coming out than Rashawn Slater was. So my question would be, okay, and I'm going to ask you this, Ryan. I'm setting you up because I want to get your thoughts on it. Do you make the move now and move Rashawn Slater, or you know, whether it be to left guard, you have a great left side, or to the right tackle, or do you have Joe Walt just turn into a right tackle? Because my theory being, I think Joe Walt can be an elite left tackle in the National Football League.
Sure.
And I feel like if you're going to pay a guy elite left tackle money, I'd rather pay Joe Walt that money in 5 years as opposed to Rashawn Slater in two. I think it's two, right? He's what?
Yeah.
He's in year three. Well,
he's in year three. So it'll be after this offseason, I believe, is when, or it might just be sometime soon. They'll try to be in front of it. But
just overall, your thoughts on that. But then also just the fit of Joe Walt with the Chargers, positional wise, but also what we know Jim Harbaugh to be. Because yes, he ran things a little differently in Michigan, but there's been a theme with Jim Harbaugh going all the way back to San Diego, the 1AA team, to Stanford, to the Niners, to Michigan. That's there was certain core foundations that went everywhere he went, and they're going to be true in Los Angeles as well.
It's such an interesting conversation because I mean, I think there's a lot of validity to playing Joel at left tackle and moving Rashawn to right tackle, because I do think fundamentally, I think that Rashawn is a better run blocker than what Joe Alt is now. And they're still, although the left tackle versus right tackle conversation has become a little bit more uniform, there still is some core values for a right tackle abides by as far as being usually the more dominant run blocker, typically, right? So I think that would make sense because Joe does have a body that is much more left tackle centric than what you would think of compared to what Rashawn is at 6'4", over 300 pounds and 33-inch arms. Like, he doesn't exactly check the boxes of the look. But if I had to predict what happens, I would predict that Joe's going to play right tackle is what I would predict, because I do think there's something to be said about a guy that's played left tackle in the NFL at a pretty high level. I mean, he's been one of the better left tackles over the last two. Well, he's played two out of three because he got hurt as a second year player, but he's been very good. He's been very good at left tackle. So I tend to think that they'll keep him at left and they'll move Joe Alt to right tackle is kind of what I believe, just because of the veteran and the known commodity and all those things associated. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when I was at the combine, every Charger media member out there asked the same question of Joe: how do you feel playing in a right-handed stance, man? You know, going over to right tackle, how's that feel? So if I had to predict a predictive nature, I would say that Joe Alt's probably going to be the right tackle of the near future for the Los Angeles Chargers, and they probably move Slater in the left, keep Slater over at left tackle. That's kind of my pulse, and then maybe Trey Pipkins is either a trade piece or he's a really good swing tackle potentially for the team, for a team that has needed better offensive tackle play for several years now. So I'll say he's over at right tackle, and that's kind of where we stay. Because
how long does that stay, Ryan? That would be my follow up. Is how long do you see that? Do you think that's for perpetuity? Do you think do they let Rashawn Slater walk in a year or two, free agent?
How long does that last? I don't think you let Rashawn just walk because he's been a really good player for them. So I think they're going to invest in him potentially. I could be wrong about that, but I think that they invest him and they have Joe Alt on a rookie deal for a few years, and then they figure out the money down the road as far as hopefully keeping them together, because Rashawn's still a young guy, obviously, and Joe's obviously super young. So you could have your bookend for the next 8 years. I mean, you could have those guys together potentially. I just think that that's probably the most reasonable scenario. And I would also say this is that left tackle versus right tackle money as far as second contracts, I don't think it will really hurt Joe that much, because right now, and I know it's going to change because the market's has been reset, but Penei Sewell is the highest paid offensive tackle in the NFL right now, and he's playing right tackle for the Detroit Lions. So that'll obviously be reset at some point, but right tackle money, my point is getting a lot closer to the left tackle money than it was just 5 to 7 years ago at this point.
So let's wrap things up a little bit, Ryan, talking about what this means for Notre Dame. Obviously, Notre Dame has continued their tradition of just being a big-time offensive line unit. And I know that people say, well, this is a another Harry Hiestand guy. And I'm like, yes, but let's give Jeff Quinn some credit here. And I gave Jeff Quinn, I banged on Jeff Quinn a lot, but this was Jeff Quinn's evaluation as a coach. Jeff Quinn's the one that identified Joe Walt and pushed for Joe Walt, even when there were much higher ranked players on the board. They loved Joe Walt. Yeah. And obviously Jeff Quinn coached him as a rookie. So you got to give Jeff Quinn a lot of credit for this one and for identifying Joe Walt, landing Joe Walt, not having him go to his dad's alma mater, or, you know, his dad's alma mater, things along those lines. So, you know, tremendous job by Jeff Quinn to identify Joe Walt. I'd say I question why it took three injuries for you to finally get him into the lineup as a freshman, but that's another conversation for another day. Sure. But look, it just continues a trend. We talked about it yesterday. You know, Notre Dame has now had four of their last five left tackles, it's three of their last four left tackles were first round picks. The non first round pick was Liam Eichenberg, who was picked 42nd overall. So your last four left tackles have been very high draft picks. Notre Dame is, if you go back to when Zach Martin joined the NFL, was drafted 14, and you go to now, and I updated this with last night's numbers, Ryan. Notre Dame is currently seventh in total offensive linemen drafted into the NFL. Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan, LSU, Georgia, and Oklahoma all have more. But Notre Dame is tied for second with Georgia with the most first-round draft picks in that period of time, because obviously Quentin Nelson was also a first-round draft pick for Notre Dame in that time. Now you had Joe Walt for Notre Dame. You had Mims for Georgia and J.C. Latham for Alabama. Yeah. Notre Dame is in Alabama are tied when it comes to the most players taken in the first three rounds. So obviously Notre Dame can show the same draft power as anyone when it comes to offensive line. But we'll stick with that first, and then I'll give that other stat, Ryan. So I think it does matter when Georgia had a first-round pick and Tennessee had a first-round pick, or excuse me, Bama had a first-round pick, that Notre Dame has once again shown we're putting out first-rounders. But here's the interesting thing. The three of your first-round picks were not just – first rounders, they were the first offensive lineman taken in the draft. I believe Ronnie Stanley was the number one offensive lineman taken in the draft because Tunsil fell behind him. And sure. I'm pretty sure Quentin Nelson was also the first offensive lineman taken in his draft class, wasn't he? Or was there a tackle taken in front of him?
I think he was the first one.
And then now, obviously, Joe Walt was the – I'll look it up while you're talking, Ryan. But yeah, but that matters too. I mean, it does. You can't deny that not only are you producing for it's because like it's one thing to say, hey, you know, we produced a first round draft pick in the last 10 years. And yeah, you went 20th. That's your claim to fame. You know what I mean? Like this other team's putting guys in the top 10. Right. And that's the difference is that right there. So, and yes, Quentin Nelson was the first offensive lineman taken. It was Baker Mayfield, Saquon Barkley, Sam Darnold, Denzel Ward, Bradley Chubb. Were all taken in front of him. And then Mike McGlinchey was the number one tackle taken in that draft class. You could even look at it that way. That three times they've had an offensive tackle was the number one tackle taken, and three times they've had the number one overall offensive line taken, lineman taken. That matters because it's not – we're not putting them in at 28, 29, 30 if you're talking about Notre Dame selling it. Right. You come here, whether you're a Harry Hiestand recruit or not, this is huge, and that's why I think it's important that Notre Dame doesn't sell this as a Harry Hiestand guy. Mm-hmm. They can sell it as a Jeff Quinn or a Joe Rudolph guy, because Joe Rudolph coached him just as much as Harry Hiestand did, because you can't sell what Harry Hiestand did as much because he's not here anymore.
Right.
And that's why I think it does move the needle for Notre Dame to say, hey, it's not just – this is only a Harry Hiestand thing, right? And I think that matters for Notre Dame in a big way.
Well, I think you should always keep the strength, right? I mean, obviously, we've talked about that there's things that Notre Dame positionally needs to do better at from a recruiting perspective and from a development perspective moving forward. But one thing that you can always count on Notre Dame for is offensive line and tight ends on the offensive side of the football. And that needs to remain true. Like, you need to keep that because that is a separator compared to X program, Y program. Like, you are the standard at that position overall, speaking of offensive line. And I think it's even more important, Brian, to like keep it a strength because Notre Dame's recruiting quarterback better now. They're recruiting running back at a very higher level. They've had some hits on wide receiver, although it needs to continue, you know, moving forward here, right? So as the skill position gets better and you are able to maintain the high level offensive line recruiting and development, hopefully moving forward, then that's where you could separate yourself, right? Because as you narrow the gap between Georgia and Notre Dame on the skill positions and other great team in Notre Dame at the skill positions, and then the offensive line is the separator between the two or the difference maker between the two, that's where Notre Dame should technically have an advantage, right? So as you have positions that are more in even playing fields, offensive line should always be the thing that you can stand on and say, that's our bread and butter. And when the skill positions are more equal, that's when Notre Dame would hopefully more consistently win those big games and hopefully get over the mountaintop.
Ryan, that is a great point, because one thing that hurt Notre Dame during the previous coach's administration, and then this was also true of the tight or the Charlie Weiss era, is Notre Dame would get really good at certain positions, and then that particular year, they'd take a step back somewhere else. You know, so Notre Dame had really good defenses early in Kelly's tenure. Then all of a sudden, they develop an elite offense in 2015 with great offensive lines, and their defense takes a big step back. And then there's years they've got great skill talent or really good skill talent, and then their offensive line takes a step back. And it just was, you know, then the offensive line is elite in 2017, and the defense gets a lot better in 2017, like to where, like, you know, Mike Elko's got a pretty darn good defense over there, and the skill talent is terrible.
Right.
You know, so it was always something missing. So to your point, don't upgrade a quarterback, upgrade a receiver, upgrade a corner, upgrade here, and then take a step back when it comes to offensive line coaching and development. Don't take a step back when it comes to tight end coaching and development. And I think that's a huge thing. And then we'll wrap it up with this, Ryan, because this is a fascinating point, and this is something that Notre Dame can sell. Notre Dame doesn't have as many first-round draft picks or doesn't have as many overall draft picks the last 10 years as Ohio State, Bama, Michigan, LSU, or Georgia. They're close. You know, like they're five behind Ohio State. Actually, you know, now they're five behind Bama, two behind Michigan, two behind LSU, two behind Georgia, one behind Oklahoma. But here's the fascinating stat. Number of all pros, all pro honors of guys that were drafted in 2014 to now. Here's the number of all pros that these programs have produced. And this is why I've said for a long time, the SEC linemen consistently get overdrafted. Notre Dame has had 14 all-pro honors from their linemen, three different players to do that. Nobody else has had three different players to do that. Ohio State, three all-pros from two players. One of them was an undrafted guy.
Who's that? Wait, let me guess. I feel like I know this. Center, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, man, what's his name? I know this one. Dang it.
You know,
I forget. It. I forget. You know it. It will come to me eventually, but I give up at the moment.
Yeah, it was Andrew Norwell.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Norwell's still kicking around the NFL too, man. He's still kicking around.
Yeah, I believe so. Bit. He was with the Commanders, I think, a year or two ago. I was looking at that the other day. But yeah, Andrew Norwell went undrafted in 2014. And then Corey Linsley's the other one. Norwell had one all pro, and then Corey Linsley, who I think was a fourth or fifth round pick, had the others. Yep. Then you look at Oklahoma's had two from two players. Now, keep in mind, Oklahoma's had a lot with Trent Williams, but I'm talking about that were drafted from 14 to 24. Trent Williams was drafted before that.
Yep.
They've had two from two players. It was
Creed Humphrey.
Creed Humphrey was one. And then I forget his first name, the other Williams, Darryl Williams had one.
Darryl Williams had an all-pro?
That's 1 year.
Wild.
1 year is an all-pro, yep. Alabama has had one All pro year, Ryan Kelly. 1 year.
Ryan Kelly's a good
player. Georgia has had one all pro year. It was Andrew Thomas a couple years ago, a second team all pro. And then Michigan had 1 year from Taylor Lewan. Mm-hmm. LSU has had zero.
Yeah.
So when you talk about, it's one thing to get drafted high, it's another thing to turn guys into impact players. And there was 1 year, and I think it was 2019. I think it was 2019 where Notre Dame had three former players that were first team all pros on the AP list: Ronnie Stanley, Quentin Nelson, Zach Martin.
It's not bad.
So that
year was also, for some context, was maybe one of the best left tackle years anyone has ever had from Ronnie Stanley. He gave up, like, folks, and this is not a misprint, I believe I remember the stat. He gave up six pressures in 16 games. Not sacks, pressures. the entire season. Like, it's wild he was that year, man.
Do you know what team is second in the most amount of all-pro honors from their offensive linemen in this era, Ryan? Now, I'm not talking number of players, but just total number of all-pros. You know, it's Wisconsin? Actually a pretty no. Nevada. Joel Batonio's got five all-pro honors in that time.
Interesting.
But yeah, Iowa has three from two players. NC State has three from one player. Wisconsin has three from one player. Okay. Wisconsin has two from one player. Oklahoma has so there's only three teams that have had multiple guys win all-pro. Iowa had Tristan Wirfs and Brandon Scherff. Ohio State had the ones we talked about, and then Oklahoma had the ones we talked about. But Notre Dame has had three different guys earn all-pro.
Nice.
And so it's not just, okay, yeah, we're putting you into the NFL, but these guys are getting big second contracts because they're going to the NFL prepared to thrive. And it's not just one guy. I mean, Mike McGlinchey's been injured a lot. He still got a pretty nice contract from the Broncos last year.
Really nice one, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's the thing that's, you know, Sam Mustipher is still kicking around the league because there's value in Notre Dame offensive linemen. If Alex Bars didn't have the injuries he's had, you know, he would have a much better shot to be in this. Tommy Kramer has started games in the National Football League, and he went undrafted. So it is really impressive that what Notre Dame has done, and now it's up to Joe Rudolph to continue it. But he's certainly going to be able to sell that. There's no doubt he's going to be able to sell that. And I believe he didn't. When was Ramczyk? How do you say his name?
Did
I say
Ramczyk?
Ramczyk.
Ryan Ramczyk.
When was he drafted? Do you remember?
I can't remember the year, but I know that Joe Rudolph worked with him for 1 year.
Okay.
1 year, I believe it was.
So he's got some guys he can look at and say, hey, I coached him. I coached Joe Walt. So that'll help him as well.
I would say this. I believe Ryan Ramczyk was like a Division II guy originally. And Rudolph, I mean, look, I don't know how much you give the credit to the previous coach, his first year at Wisconsin with Ryan Ramczyk, but I mean, he took a massive step forward. Like, Ryan Ramczyk was not viewed as a potential first round pick coming into his final year. Like, he had a big year that year that kind of took him over the top.
So yeah, you can lay the foundation, but the other coaches gotta. I mean, this is what we did with Harry Hiestand last year, right? Like, hey, certain guys laid the foundation, but you've got to take it to the next step. So that certainly helps Joe Rudolph. There's no doubt about that. And he's had several other. I mean, let's be honest. Joe Rudolph went to Wisconsin in, what was it, 15, 16? What was the year he went to Wisconsin? It was 2015.
15 sounds right.
15 sounds right, yeah. So during his tenure there, he had a fourth round pick. No, somebody offensive line. He had the first round pick in Ramczyk.
Yep.
He had a third round pick in Michael Dieter. Fifth round pick, David Edwards. Fourth round pick, Tyler, I never pronounce, Biotish, right?
Biotish, yep.
He had Cole Van Lannen, was a sixth round pick. Logan Bruss was a third round pick. And then Joe Tippmann a couple years ago was a second round pick.
Joe Tippmann's a good player too, by the way.
So, I mean, so it's not like Joe Rudolph has got to only build on the legacy of Harry Hiestand. Yep. He's got his own, and now you can add Joe Alt to that.
And you have to give him some credit for what the pipeline is for Wisconsin over next year or two too. Right. Like Tanner Bordellini might get drafted today, who was one of his guys and that has been starting for multiple years. He also recruited Jack Nelson, who's probably going to be drafted next year. Who's the other? The right tackle's name always escapes me for some reason. Riley Malman. He might get drafted next year as well. So even a couple of these guys that are
Minnesota,
coming.
Minnesota, right? I mean, yeah. And I remember Notre Dame looked at him, and I actually saw him at a. Now, let me just say, this is not at all to take away from Harry Hiestand. Everybody knows. I think he's a legend. He is, in my opinion, the best college coach of the last 15 years. It's simply to say it's important for Notre Dame to be able to have something to show besides just the great success that Harry Hiestand showed. Because if it was only the success during his tenure, then it'd be much harder to say, but we're going to keep it rolling. Yep. And that's the point, to point out why it's important to point out that Joe Rudolph was not recruited by Harry Hiestand. Go ahead.
Can I add one more too, is that if you go back to Joe Rudolph's time at Pitt, he was also the guy that recruited Brian O'Neill,
right,
who is now a very good offensive lineman
in
the NFL. So he's got some guys.
And was a first-round pick. So that's important. That's very important to have that, Ryan, to be able to develop that. And now it's about keeping it going. And so that certainly helps Notre Dame, because offensive linemen are really different from a lot of other players. But the best of the best still have that desire to go somewhere. They know they're going to get developed and be given an opportunity to go play professional football. I don't care this. They have different things that they care about than other players, but that's still something that's going to matter to a lot of these kids. And you know that for the last 3 years covering recruiting. It doesn't matter who it is, guys that have picked Notre Dame and guys that haven't, that still matters. It may not be the only thing that matters to them, where at some positions it does, but especially the top guys, it still matters. I want to be developed. I want to get a chance to play professional football.
I obviously don't know the number off the top of my head, but I would say about 95% of the offensive linemen that Notre Dame recruits understands how important it is to, you know, be a potentially part of that program and the lineage and the developments. They firmly understand that. I've only come across maybe one or two guys that are just really deaf to what Notre Dame offensive line play has been over the years. And no shocker, a couple of those guys didn't end up having any traction with Notre Dame. And one guy's playing down in the University of Miami right now, which we won't talk about, but yeah. But keep asking me if he's visiting, guys. So visit at some point. Sure.
Well, Ryan, let's kind of real quick before we move on. Obviously, that number could continue. It could be another Jeff Quinn recruit will likely get picked. Is going to get picked this weekend. Could get picked tonight. So that number, that top three round Notre Dame pedigree could add another player tonight if Blake Fisher is able to get drafted. You still have Blake early round three. I saw, I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been from The Athletic that had their day two mock draft that had him going late in the second round. So there's at least a chance that Blake Fisher gets picked tonight as well, Ryan.
I forget what site it was. It was ESPN or maybe it was The Athletic. It was someone that's reputable. And they had the top offensive tackle left on the board right now as Blake Fisher. And I was like, and because if there's a demand, Brian, there's a couple teams that did not get an offensive tackle in the first round that probably would have liked an offensive tackle.
Yesterday, Ryan. We talked about how he could become a guy that's a commodity if there's a run on offensive tackle in the first round, because there is a bit of a drop off after those first few guys. And then when Dallas took Tyler Guyton late in the first round, and then Green Bay took just Joshua Morgan. I always want to say Jordan Morgan. Okay.
Yep.
That's the Michigan basketball player. They took Jordan Morgan.
Yep.
All of a sudden that run happened to where there was a couple guys that people thought would be maybe early second round picks that are off the board now.
Yep.
You know, Tyler Guyton, we thought would be a first round pick, whether he should or shouldn't have is a different conversation, but Jordan Morgan was a guy that I was seeing picked in the 30s and 40s on a lot of mock drafts. So to your point, when that happens, I joked last night when Michael Penix went eighth, I was like, at this rate, Sam Hartman might be picked in the 20s. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. You had six quarterbacks going to the top 12. I was being sarcastic, but I think there is truth to it at offensive tackle, though, Ryan.
Well, no, and I would say there's truth to it at multiple positions, is that you see teams every year pull out a weird pick in the first round and beyond that because they panic, man. They panic. I know what we might talk about Ricky Pearsall in the next one, the wide receiver out of Florida. Yeah. Who I think we both agree is a pretty good football player. I like him. I think he would have been a very sound day two player, but I firmly believe that the run on wide receivers that we saw at the end there was like Ricky Pearsall. Now let's take Ricky Pearsall. And then you saw the Carolina Panthers trade back to 32 to take Xavier Leggett too. It's just I think teams panic in a lot of these situations, man. Chop Robinson being drafted by Miami. I think that was a little bit of a panic move after all three of the top edges were off the board. Teams panic all the time. It happens.
I think the Broncos did that with Bo Nix. There was a lot of talk that they loved Bo Nix, but they wanted to try to move back a little bit and get him. But you couldn't take that chance once Michael Penix got taken eighth overall. Because the thing is, if the Broncos' saving grace could be if we fall back to around 20 and somebody takes Bo Nix, there's still Michael Penix sitting there.
Right.
Well, once he went eighth, it was like, well, there we go. But we'll get into that in the next section, Ryan. So obviously, we're Notre Dame has a chance to maybe hear a couple guys called tonight. Blake Fisher being one. We could potentially hear Cam Hart's name tonight. We could potentially hear Audric Estime's name tonight as well. So lots of potential action for Notre Dame prospects tonight. I think we're going to see a flurry of moves in the first 10 picks of the second round. I just have this feeling because I think what happened with the receiver draft got pushed back, to your point. There was a little bit of a panic run in the second round, but there's still a lot of really good wide receivers left on the board early in round two for teams that didn't get it. And then, as you said, there's some offensive linemen there as well. And some really good corners, I think, still left on the board. So we'll see how that, if that run starts. Cooper DeJean still on there. Kool-Aid McKinstry's on there. Yep. Does that run start? Does that then push Cam Hart up? Does other positions run? That's the fascinating thing about the draft, and we'll look into that. We'll talk about that here in a little bit later. But before we get to section two of today's show, folks, do us a favor, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, not just physically click the share button, which helps us and helps us with the algorithm and helps us grow our channel. But if you have Notre Dame friends and family that are not listening to the Irish Breakdown show, you need to get them on to us. You need to help us out. We don't do any advertising. We trust you guys to share the word with other people about the job that we're doing here. We'd appreciate that. Give us a five-star review on your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, whatever that may be. We'd greatly appreciate that. And Ryan, I don't know if you had a chance to see this. I know you've been very busy today, but I did. You know that I did the play-by-play grades of the offensive line from the Blue Gold game. Yep. But I actually took them both and put them into one long document, and then also ranked top overall. I think it was 14 guys played. Just ranked them by grade, both teams together. Ranked it by grade, run blocking grade, pass blocking grade. You can only get that at Irish Breakdown, folks, I'm telling you. And there were some surprises. You know, like when you know you watch a game live, Ryan, and you're like, that guy did okay. And then you go back and grade it, and you're like, he had a 91%. I actually had a couple guys. I had to go back and rewatch the game because, like, I was like, no, there's no way that guy graded out that high because it just didn't feel like it. And then there's a couple guys that I thought played well that just their grade was a little bit lower because it's more of a, did you do your job or not? It doesn't take into account, did you dominate on this rep? Did you do your job from an assignment standpoint? And then I provided some analysis of, okay, Billy Shrouth didn't grade as high as other guys because he had a couple misses, but his dominant moments were really good. Rocco Spindler graded high and had dominant moments. And I'll give you all a little teaser. Rocco Spindler was my highest ranked offensive lineman. Or highest graded offensive lineman from the Blue Gold game. So do you know who finished in the top four, Brian, in that guy that surprised me finished in the top four? Christopher Tarek.
Yeah, yes. I know you were high on his performance. I remember
yes. talking about that. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he did his job. He just did a nice solid job, which I was a little surprised because I didn't really notice him a ton watching live. You know, I had a couple nice power blocks here, but no, I'm sorry. Emil Wagner was my number one ranked offensive lineman. Oh. Rocco was second. By 0.1, they were 0.1 apart, and it came down to Emil played one more snap than Rocco. So he played 62 snaps, Rocco played one. So the percentage of it was a little bit different. So
neither one of those guys can run a fade route like Christopher Tarek, though.
No, so they cannot. But Christopher Tarek was third in that one. So yeah, he did well. So anyway, check that out. You can only get that at the message premium message boards at boards.irishbreakdown.com. We're gonna talk about just the first round in general, but thank you all for being with us for part one of the Irish Breakdown podcast.